There are no people in the future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
It is Friday, April 16th, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week I talk to our, what is it now, Sean?
Vaccinated shit poster.
Ah, it's still our vaccinated shit poster, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Yes, we are streaming live on our YouTube channel. Yes, don't forget while you're over there, smash that subscribe button, like the stream, and hit the bell so you know that every time that we go live. But of course, you can always get this show and our Monday Out the Coop live show by subscribing to our podcast wherever you get your podcast. On this week's show, Kimberly Potter, the officer that shot and killed Dante Wright, a 20-year-old black man, has been fired and will face second-degree manslaughter charges. Potter, a 26-year veteran of the Brooklyn Center and Minnesota Police Force and president of the police union, claims that she meant to use a taser but pulled her weapon instead. There's never an argument then for like taking like traffic stops away from police. This is it right here. And more arguments for why we need to defund the police. Chicago police released body cam footage of an officer killing a 13-year-old young black man, Adam Toledo, as he raised his hands up. Minnesota protests continue and have been met with militarized police response. This is like a return to last year. Meanwhile, in Virginia, a cop drew his weapon and pepper sprayed a uniformed soldier at a traffic stop. The Windsor Police Department officer apparently thought the car had no plates, despite the new car temporary tags clearly being displayed in the rearview window. When Army Lieutenant Caron Nazario asked the officer what was going on, Officer Joe Gutierrez responded, "What's going on is you're fixing to ride the lightning, son," and proceeded to pepper spray him in the face. And lawyers for Derek Chauvin, the cop that slowly killed George Floyd, rested their case after trying to smear Floyd and falsely attributing his death to drugs. Chauvin refused to take the stand, invoking the Fifth Amendment in what was a highly anticipated decision. President Biden has been dragging his feet on relaxing Trump's inhumane restrictions on refugees, leading to a lot of head-scratching and anger from Democrats and immigrant and refugee rights groups. According to new reporting by CNN, the reason for the delay, this just drives me insane. The reason for the delay is that Biden is fretting over the political optics of allowing more refugees into the country. The delay has left thousands of people seeking refuge in a state of limbo after already a lengthy waiting process. And this, you know, remember, this is a Biden campaign promise too as well, right? The Guardian reports that police officers and public officials from around the country have been donating to Kyle Rittenhouse's Legal Defense Fund. Yeah, you remember him. Little white assassin, that dude. An executive internal affairs officer from Norfolk, Virginia, gave a donation that said, "Keep your head up. You've done nothing wrong." About that. And this week, the Florida Senate passed an anti-riot bill that Republican Governor Ron DeSantis has been drooling over. According to the Orlando Sentinel, the bill will, quote, grant civil immunity to people who drive through protesters blocking a road, prevent people arrested for rioting or offenses committed during a riot from seeking bail until they have their first court appearance, and it will impose a six-month mandatory sentence for battery on a police officer during a riot. What exactly a riot isn't kind of quite thing, up to the discretion of the officers, because they seem so well attuned to being able to judge what is appropriate in every given situation. Insane. There's more of this stuff to come, folks. More alarming news on the climate front. In a new study by the Key Biodiversity Area Secretariat in Cambridge, UK, scientists found that, quote, just 3% of the world's land remains ecologically intact, with healthy populations of all its original animals and undisturbed habitat, according to The Guardian. Previous analyses put this between 20 and 40%. However, those studies relied heavily on satellite imagery, which could give the false impression that the ecosystems are intact. And the numbers are in. Workers hoping to unionize at the Amazon Bessemer plant, our plant in Bessemer, Alabama, lost their election in a blowout. The vote was 738 in favor of the union to 1,998 against it. Writing in The Nation, Jane McAlevey argues that the effort does not mean that unionizing Amazon plants are doomed. Rather, there were warning signs all over the campaign that had some serious problems. Some due to Amazon's union-busting efforts, absolutely, but also due to some fatal flaws in the organizing campaign itself, including inaccurate lists of workers, poor handling of discussions about union dues, a focus on plant gates with no house calls, and there was no sign of majority support throughout the campaign. Get into that a little bit. A little closer to home, today's PA focus, Seth Grove and the House State Government Committee ended their dog and pony show relitigating the 2020 election. Oh man, it's a gift that keeps on giving. The meeting spanned 2 months, took up a total of 48 hours, and continued to spread disinformation surrounding the 2020 election. In the waning days, Grove invited members from multiple Heritage Foundation fronts, the Foundation for Government Accountability, the Public Interest Legal Foundation, and other Koch brother-backed organizations to continue Trump's big lie. The next phase of the PA House Republicans' plan to cancel voting rights in Pennsylvania moves forward, and it may take months for legislation to take shape, but Pennsylvania will be a focal point as Republicans look to push a smorgasbord of voter suppression tactics, like signature matching and voter IDs. The Philadelphia Police Department launched a short-lived initiative to combat gun violence in the city this week. Yeah, Commissioner Outlaw announced that the police department was going to team up with Department of Parks and Recreation to teach children about gun safety. The problem? The commissioner stated that they were going to use the NRA's Eddie Eagle program, without stating that it was an NRA-backed program. The initiative lasted less than a day after gun safety advocates and residents pounced on the idea. Philadelphia Councilmember Kendra Brooks announced two bills this week that would end the practice of landlords denying prospective tenants based upon their eviction records. Brooks explained her rationale to WHYY, quote, "Structural barriers and biases in the renting process disproportionately impact low-income renters, especially black women. And as we know, these same renters have been hit hardest by the pandemic. We must work toward a pandemic recovery that leaves no one behind, and protecting renters' right to access affordable rental properties is key part of that." Bravo. And Posse Chancellor Dan Greenstein made his case for his plan to fundamentally redesign the 14 state-owned university system to the Board of Governors on Thursday. This was the time that he's going to report back with his final plan. And the Board of Governors Chair, Cynthia Shapira, called Greenstein's remarks inspirational as she threw her support behind his plans to merge six of the universities into two, fire hundreds of faculty and staff, and force students into more online classes. Now, there was one piece of good news from the meeting that actually is getting a heck of a lot more coverage. That's the board agreed to freeze tuition for a third straight year. That's one that is legit good news. In today's last call, NASA's InSight Mars lander is going into emergency hibernation due to buildup of dust on the lander's solar panels. Since landing in Elysium Planitia in 2018, InSight has been busy detecting more than 500 Mars quakes and beginning to measure Mars's core. Scientists say the lack of powerful gusts of winds that are common on other parts of the planet led to the buildup. And still no flight for Ingenuity. An expected test flight for the Little Mars helicopter was called off earlier this week due to a software issue related to its flight control. A fix has been identified, and NASA team says that the Ingenuity may be ready to give it another go as early as next week. An acting NASA administrator, Steve Jurczyk, announced that not only will the Artemis mission be put the first woman on the moon, it will also send the first person of color as well. And I'm just going to be seeking out some human robot beer this coming week. I'll tell you a little bit about that. And we'll have, of course, our usual update on Free Will Brewing's releases for this week. I want to remind everybody, tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org, or tune in to the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure to subscribe to Rick Smith Show's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. And you got to check it out. Check out the newly launched Sisters of the Night Caucus. Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. Yep. You can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast. The second episode dropped this week featuring State Senator Katie Booth. Yes, 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 is Katie Booth there. Yes, you got to check out this podcast with the amazing PA women that are stirring the cauldron behind this podcast. And they rock the house and they know where the bodies are buried. Spooky, right? Just make sure to follow them on Twitter and at the Night Caucus and subscribe to wherever you get your podcast. And this past week on Out the Coop Live, I had Chad Nicholson from CellDef, who's talking a lot about the Rights for Nature legislation and the battle against fracking in Grant Township. This coming Monday, I've got Karen Ferradin. Yeah, notice like there's a fracking theme that's been going on here. Didn't start to be intentional, but here we go. Monday, I've got Karen Ferradin from Burke's Gas Truth and the Better Path Coalition. We'll be talking about the We Are the Ones campaign. And on May 3rd, I'll be welcoming Melissa Troutman and Joshua Probanek, directors of the Rights of Nature film, The Invisible Hand, to the show. So stay tuned for more details about that. We also got a show coming up that's going to be dealing with some college debt issues. I'm telling you, it's been fantastic. For all you gamers out there, make sure you check out the Game Inn for all your gaming needs. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. Yes, make sure that you check them out. You can check them on their Facebook page. You can follow them on Twitter at The Game Inn. Got a question about a game? Look for something hard to get. Message them on Facebook or drop them an email at thegameinnpa@gmail.com or give them a call at 267-424-2535. Or check them out online at thegameinn.com. And look, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today by becoming a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress. We got rid of Trump, and now we got the hard work of building a progressive future. We're here for the fight, but we need you. Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media and the movement, the media. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Sean, man, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good. I got to say, you've got like a clear picture this week. Everything's streaming real well. I think that's got to have something to do with the plants in the background. I think
it's giving off good vibes.
The atmosphere, I think, is just clearing everything out. I think it's working well.
Yeah, nature is healing. Spring is here.
Well, yeah. you know, maybe you're not. You know, maybe it's also you're not trying to edit your photographs. You're in the middle of a podcast too, so that might be helpful.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what's up with today. I think my computer's on the last leg. Some days it's good. Some days it's not good. So I think we're on a spot where it's good right now. Hopefully, it lasts for the whole entire podcast. But yeah, you know, my office space is slowly coming together. I finally hung up the AOC photo up here.
Yeah, I see that.
I'll be filling it in slowly over the next couple months. I've just been working, looking at getting accessories for my Apple when it comes in sometime next week or the following week. So can't wait for that. Can't wait to make that my new work center.
Yeah, we'll see.
The Death Star.
So this is the Death Star. Oh man. Well, I'll tell you. I think the one thing, kind of right off the bat. I mean, this. You know, I don't know if this past 2 weeks, if there could be a better argument for kind of like the defund the police folks, right? And you know, I mean, you look at one, on the one hand, you've got the Derek Chauvin trial, you've got the kind of, you know, the murder, multiple police killings and abuse that have been caught on film. I mean, again, let's be clear, this is not new, and this has been exactly the problem.
Right. And I think it shows you that, like, body cam footage doesn't stop bad cops from acting like bad cops. Yep. You know, this was like the panacea that the Obama administration gave everyone. And no, it's just showing that bad cops are still acting like bad cops. And there's been little to no accountability once these cops have been caught on camera doing this stuff, like their own body cams. We need to really change up the whole entire police culture. From the ground up.
Well, and let's be clear, this is not just about better training, right? I mean, they found like Kimberly Potter, right? You know, she was the officer that shot Dante Wright, you know, that 20-year-old black man, right? What she thought she had her taser in her hand, but it turns out he had her Glock or whatever and just kind of like shot him, right? She was, not only was she the president of the police union, she was a 26-year veteran of that police force, and she was someone who was training other officers in the use of their weapons, right? I mean, so, you know, at the very fundamental level, it's not about just like better training. I mean, this has been the pitch that, you know, I mean, again, it's been a disgusting dance that police departments have been doing over the past, you know, kind of several decades, where that you have these, you know, like assassinations of black men. Right. They get off, you know, they get off in trial and they're like, oh, God, because they were afraid for the lives or things like this. And then there's a discussion about, well, we need to kind of have bias training and better training of all this stuff. So but in order to do that, we need more money. So people pass, you know, cities and municipalities pass budgets with more money for the police. Right. And then what does it do? This is what it does. It gets us to the same place all over again, except now they're, you know, buying kind of surplus military gear. And so it's like, you know, I mean, I look at this, you know, Sam Cedar made a really good point this week. And, you know, he's not alone. This has been, you know, several people have been pointing to this. When we're talking about, say, defund the police. This is like a perfect example of this. You say like,
and it's also, you see the people who screamed the loudest about losing elections after 2020, after November, the people within Democratic Party infrastructure, the people within the C4 or like the PAC worlds and like on both sides of that wall, you know, who blame defund the police and blame Black Lives Matter for not winning their races locally, pretty fucking quiet right now.
Yeah,
crickets,
you think?
Crickets coming from that side.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, you had good instance was Emily Skopoff, or you know, out in Western Pennsylvania, blame defund the police for her not winning her race in a out in Pittsburgh. And you know, we've heard, you know, you hear this stuff on phone calls and like other chatter, like, you know, there's people within party infrastructure that believe that defund the police cost them the 2020 election, and that, like, you know, it wasn't their shitty messaging around issues, and it wasn't that, like, they're like, you know, we can't like embrace the civil rights movement because we have to win the white votes in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Democratic Party has to pick, you know, has to start making hard decisions on like who they're going to protect and who, like what voters they're going to take care of. Either they're going to be taking care of the voters in the city who have been in their base traditionally, or they're going to, you know, like they cast them aside and cast those civil rights issues aside to get more moderate voters in the suburbs. Like, you know, it's this is where we're going. And it's like the people who, you know, spent months blaming defund the police have been pretty quiet over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think we should be clear, too, as well. I mean, they've been, you know, quiet about it because, one, they're, you know, clearly wrong, right? That this is just only kind of got exacerbated and bigger. This is – and now we see what's going to go on here. And the other thing that we should be clear about when we talk about, say, defund the police, right? Because I think that, you know, it just people need to be constantly reminded of this. Right. This doesn't mean that you kind of abolish all police officers in all situations, although there's that debate, too, as well. The abolitionists are out there. But defund is kind of like really about repurposing resources. Right. And basically deciding, you know, what are you going to do? So, like, you know, Sam Cedar made this good point this week. It's like you want to have an easy way, like, to decrease the amount of deaths, like right off the bat. It's like you no longer have police officers doing traffic stops. Right. If you got a light out. Right. Or you've got an expired registration key. We have cameras, right, that are posted like on stoplights that could read your license plate. Right. And send you a ticket if you ran a red light. Right. We have the turnpike now operates in kind of automated reading of, like, you know, the tags and everything. It would be easy enough to say, OK, you notice that somebody's got a light out. You just kind of snap a picture of their license plate, look it up and send them a bill. Right.
Or notification. Like, I mean, Dante Wright died this week because of a, like, warrant that was out on a, like, fine. Like, not even, like, a criminal offense, but, like, a fine, a summary offense warrant. Like, you know, like, that type of stuff shouldn't be happening. You know, a cop shouldn't, like, there should not be, people should not be arrested if they have warrants out for their arrest for summary offenses that need to get paid off. Like, if for outstanding fines to a court. Like, you know what I mean? Like, especially if it's, like, over. I mean, like, in Harrisburg, if you go a week without a parking ticket, you get a warrant in the mail for your arrest to pay up their parking ticket.
Right.
Like, you shouldn't be arrested for that. Like, if you get pulled over. Like, that's just full stop. I mean, like in Philadelphia, one of the things they're talking about this summer is paying cops overtime to have them sit outside recreation centers and pools and stuff like that. Like, they're not going to be doing it in the white neighborhoods. They're going to be doing it in the black and brown neighborhoods. So we're going to be giving cops more money to sit overtime to patrol recreation centers in the city instead of, like, you know, allocating that money somewhere else.
Right.
Or towards more effective programs.
Well, right. But I mean, the whole idea that if you just basically say police will no longer perform traffic stops, you know, obviously if somebody is kind of like,
or you make them peace officers and just take their weapons away. Like,
but that's what I mean, right? If you take the weapons away, you take the weapons away in many cases, but you know, you think about just the traffic stops. There's a reason why DSA, right, started having their taillight clinics. Right. Because they recognize that violence, right, between police and kind of black and brown communities happens most often around these kind of like engagements. Right. It starts with you think about how many times that we see the death of a black man and in some cases women, right, who are killed because of a traffic stop. Right. But let's be clear. Let's even in cases when somebody has like an outstanding warrant. Right. That doesn't justify a police officer killing someone, right? You're giving them the powers of being executioners over minor infractions in many cases, right?
Where the cops should have just said, hey, you have a warrant for a fine that needs to get paid off. Make sure you take care of it.
Right. Or why was he even pulled over to begin with, right?
A registration issue.
Right. That should not even have happened. Right. They could have basically taken a picture of the way, you know, obviously called in the license plate, issued this, you know, expired registration and be gone. There's no reason that he had to be pulled over for that, especially in this climate. Until we're at a point where we've fundamentally changed the culture of policing. Right. That should be a right taken away from the police. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And it's like it's a registration issue where you have to register your car with the state every year. Like it's. Yeah. No, and like the stuff's bullshit.
I know white people that have like gone with expired registrations for years in their car and even sat right outside their apartment for ages, right? And nothing got touched.
Like me? Exactly. I literally went with my job before I got my current job, I was not able to afford to get my car inspected. And it went a year and a half, 2 years without getting inspected. Like I got pulled over once in that whole entire situation. The cop's like, yeah, you can just sign up for a payment plan. That's all you need to do. Like to pay off the ticket.
Yep.
Like I got pulled over once back home. Like when I was in high school when I was in college, I had a fucking ball sitting in my fucking coffee cup in the center console. And a cop just like said, here's a ticket. Show up to court with your proof of registration and I'll throw the case out for you. Like, and that's, like that is white privilege. That is like
totally. Yep.
That is the privilege of being a white person getting pulled over for minor traffic stops or like, you know, an expired registration. I mean all the things that happened this week, the Nazario, the lieutenant in the army who got pulled over, and that happened
crazy.
That was crazy. And then did you see the connections that were made? Someone tweeted out Nazario, his uncle was the person that was murdered in New York with the chokehold.
Eric Garner.
Yeah. He was related to Eric Garner.
Are you kidding me?
No. That was his uncle.
Wow.
And someone put out like there was a tweet like saying like Fred Hampton's mother used to babysit Emmett Till, like making these connections of like white supremacy and how they like ripple throughout the black community and how connected they are within the black community. And then we have the Chauvin trial going on.
Yeah. So I have to say of any police trial, like, you know, trial of a police killing, I've never seen so many cops flip like this. Right. I mean, yeah. It's been pretty amazing to watch.
I mean, this is something I've been watching a couple of clips on the news. I've actively avoided watching this trial just because of how traumatizing, you know, this is just ripping band-aids off old wounds. And I mean, you see the lawyer going back to the playbook like that, you know, George Floyd deserved to die because it was his own fault.
Right, because because he was on drugs, because he was, you know, he's been arrested before, because, you know, I mean,
he passed a fake $20 bill off to someone.
I mean, just think about that for a second. I mean, for anybody who's listening to this podcast right now, who's ever been smoking weed, right? I mean, literally.
Yeah.
And you're just, I mean, and you're smoking weed, and then let's say you're smoking weed and then you got caught, right? And then you had to go to court and you got it wiped out, and then you kept on smoking weed again. Do you deserve to die for that? Right? I mean, that's what we're talking about. Right? So that, you know, so that's death because you didn't obey the law? I mean, there is no white person out there that would accept that as something that's legitimate when it comes to them personally. Right. I mean, this is why. I mean, there is no way around it. I mean, we have to. I mean,
or that the smoking weed caused your death because you had it in your system.
Totally.
While life was getting choked out of you from a cop.
I mean, that was the most. That had to be one of the most brutal killings I've seen because it was like slow death. It was freaking torture. He killed. I mean, there's no way that guy just like didn't know. I mean, and there is no way that you can read what happened there and what continues to happen without confronting white supremacy like front and center. When people of color and those people are dealt with as criminals by default, right? And white people are looked at as individuals with complex emotional backgrounds and histories. Right. That's white supremacy, folks. I don't know what the hell to tell you. I mean, it's like this is front and center. I mean, you know what? Again, I've said this on the show before. It's like you have these things that are coming together right now, which are just like incredibly hopeful. Is that on the one hand, you've got the climate crisis and people responding to that. On the other hand, you've got people responding to kind of like the massive amounts of wealth inequality. And then on the other hand, we've got three hands here. We've got the kind of confronting of white supremacy through the kind of social movements. And all these are movement-based. All of these are movement-based that have been pushing some politicians to do the right thing, but they won't do it unless we keep up the pressure. And I'm just, look, everything is lined up right now in the Derek Chauvin case that he's going to go down. But it's going to be, you know, I mean, when have you seen, say, you know, police officers breaking the blue line, right, and testifying against other police officers, and not just like begrudgingly, but basically staying in no uncertain terms, this was, there's nothing about what he did that was sanctioned. This should have stopped. Like everyone from the person that was in the 911 office, right, to the head of his department, one after the other, right? And now what people I think have rightfully pointed out is that the one thing that has remained like off the table, so to speak, has been, you know, the Minnesota Police Department itself, right? Minneapolis Police Department, Minnesota's Police Department, looking at kind of like the policing as a whole, right? So on the one hand, the Derek Chauvin case has allowed for, you know, maybe a historic breakthrough when it comes to prosecuting cop killers or cops who are killers, right? Murderers who are cops, right? Maybe we'll finally get to that point, right? But then now that's not over, right? I mean, that has to immediately lead into like, now we have to address policing as a whole, because like Derek Chauvin is as much a product of that system as anything else, a product of white supremacy and the role that police departments have played in that white supremacy. I don't know.
Yeah. Sorry. Trolling the Senate Republican Communications Director right now. So you see me like zonking out for a minute or two.
I did. I saw this huge smile going across your face. I'm like, oh, good. You're smiling, you're looking down. I'm like, either you're tweeting or you're doing something I don't want to know about. That's all I'm saying.
I hooked a live one. The Senate Republican Communications Director decided to engage with me on Twitter after I called her out for lying about the election and, you know, Republicans trying to seal the vote. So she said, facts, Democrats in the Northeast have the most restrictive voting access in the country. And I respond, facts, Republicans hate cancel culture until it comes canceling the votes of black and brown voters across the country because they vote for Democrats.
There you go.
But I love no nonsense, bullshit. Just go dropping the bomb, right? Zero to nuclear.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see if the if that fish is going to continue to fight.
I sent it to my troll group. I was like, guys, yeah, there I caught a live one.
We hooked one. Get on it.
So yeah, no, I'm going to try to refrain from engaging with this throughout the podcast.
Oh God, but... imagine that. I guess we better go quick. Oh man. So I don't know if you've been following this. So we got that. I don't know if you've been following this very much, but
I mean, also on the cop issue, we got to talk about Kyle Rittenhouse.
Yeah. Oh, please, like, go ahead. Yeah. Go. Go. Yeah. Yep,
this was published either earlier today or last night, but Rittenhouse. There was a data breach with all the people who were giving him money, and it turns out that he received a lot of money in small dollar donations from police officers around the country and from public officials claiming he did nothing wrong. Besides, you know, killed two people and blew off an arm of a third with an AR-15, traveled across state lines to go to a riot and shoot people. I mean, I don't think there's
any... No double standard there, right? I mean...
Who then the cops allowed him to walk away free? Walk through a police line with his gun after he fucking shot three people.
Yeah. I mean, like you know, it's nice. You can draw these lines pretty well, right? You draw the lines between what happened on January 6th in the Capitol, like with the insurrection, with the kind of, you know, the persistent and, like, you know, the killings of primarily black men, but black women as well. Right. As a result of kind of white supremacy and policing, kind of with that kind of coupled history. And then you get here the perfect example on the other end of this. You get, you know, the vigilante kind of white kid killer is like, you know, a folk hero among those same police. See the problem here? Oh, my God. Meanwhile, I don't know. What do you make of what the hell Biden is? What's going on with Biden and the immigration stuff?
I haven't really paid attention to it. I think I think the argument that the media is partly responsible for this. The media, like, for allowing Fox and the conservative media to gin up these lies about the issues at the border. And then the media feeling compelled that they have to cover these lies because Fox News and the right wing infrastructure is yelling about it. And now, now Biden is cowering because of these lies and doesn't want a bad optics to look at it.
It just, well, that's what he said. I mean, that's what, you know, they,
like, fuck the optics.
Yeah. People tell him that's why Biden is wearing. They basically pointed back to, you know, a strategy that has been pretty consistent in Biden's history, which has been, you know, you're going to kind of buy yourself time until you can figure out what is going to be the most politically beneficial position for which to take. Right. And so he bounces around for sides, not really kind of coming down on a thing, maybe have a commission or something like this. But it's been disturbing to me because, you know, one of the things that was, I think, most clear during the election, right, was that, you know, the kids in cages stuff. The denying of refugees, right? The kind of
the banning of Muslims from other
banning
countries.
Of Muslims. Like, I mean, these were things that were like ground zero, easy to do.
And these were things that were not just like implemented by Trump, but implemented by an actual fascist in Stephen Miller, who ran the goalpost so far to the right on this that, like, we have to undo this. Like, keeping the policies that Stephen Miller put in place, like, is just unacceptable.
Right.
And like, I think completely unacceptable.
100%. Like, just period. Right. That's it. And so given that, right, I mean, but you look at what Biden has done on a series of other issues, right, and it's gone in completely the opposite direction of what he's doing here. Right. That he's basically saying, like, okay, yeah, you're telling me all this. You want me to be upset about this? You know, come on, man. You know, I'm gonna do it anyways. As a matter of fact, I'm gonna double down on this. And what this concerns me, right? You know, this is what I always start thinking about is like, okay, who's got his ear on this one, right? Which Democrats on his, like, in his little orbit are the ones who are going to be kind of all fretting about right-wing media all over again, right? And they're going to be looking at kind of poll numbers for, you know, again, because these people pull poll numbers that serve their own suspicions. Because, I mean, this is like, you know, making
Instead
sure.
Instead of doing what's morally correct.
Well, exactly. And they look for stuff because they're hesitant about it because there's been this learned helplessness or this learned kind of like the only thing that we could do is respond to the right wing. And the right wings are big, scary monsters. So we better be careful not to upset them. And, you know, and Biden is like, look, I've said this multiple times in the show. So have you. I have been pleasantly surprised so far with what Biden has been doing. I mean, it's like pretty remarkable. A little bit kind of annoyed at some of the kind of the hedging that's going around in the
Biden
infrastructure
came out
bill,
this week.
But
we
this one is kind of like absolutely kind of like this one is unexplainable to me why they would make such a shift here.
And also, I mean, like it came out this week, like out of nowhere, that Biden is ending the war in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I would even mention this on the top.
But
yes,
like we didn't even mention this. But like for something that like. The right wing and then also the military industrial complex, like the military contractors like Petraeus and other generals who have gone from the army into the like profiteering side of the war machine, like have been adamantly pissed about and opposed about. Like Biden said, nope, unconditional withdrawal.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It's like this is like there you go, right? This is completely unpopular with the right wing media, and like, okay, here's where we're gonna do this. He appointed the first ever transgendered woman, right, to his cabinet, Rachel Levine, right, which set the right wing ballistic. He did it anyways, and I'll tell you is that you know again, I immigrant rights groups and refugee kind of advocates have kind of said this over and over again. They say, look, Democrats have been as bad as Republicans in many cases. And so they're like, okay, we got burnt with Obama, right? Obama put more, you know, deported more immigrants, like more kind of undocumented folks than anyone before him, and then set the groundwork for what we saw in Trump. And so they know, it's like, no, neither party. Nah, this is not a party thing. And Democrats are just going to like shoot themselves in the foot if they think that they could basically keep people waiting again. And then basically say that, no, we're just going to count on you to kind of support. There's no way. Why the hell would you support them in this case?
I think organizations like CASA and other immigrant right groups are not going to allow this to happen. I mean, like, we'll see what happens in the future. But I feel like the progressive movement is not going to relent on this.
I agree. And that's why, you know, again, this is like, you know, all the more reason to get behind all the work that people like right here, like Make the Road PA do.
Make the Road, CASA, PA stands up. Like all these organizations here in Pennsylvania are working together. They're all in the coalition calls. Like, and it's like a good chunk of the calls we have are people from CASA, like speaking out about like this type of stuff. So I don't see this. I don't see like this type of an issue going away.
Yeah, it's like for me, it's like the one thing that comes out of this. I agree with you, and I don't think that this can last for very long because the heat that is coming from the left, from progressive, from immigrant rights groups, from you know immigrant attorney stuff, and from just basically, you know, even some kind of like relatively mainstream Democrats are like, what the hell is he doing? Right, because they've seen the tide change. But you know, anyways, it's like I don't think it's going to stand. But this is also like proof of concept that you cannot keep the pressure off of Biden and this administration, right? That there is no going to sleep. I mean, because it's clear that you pause the pressure for a minute and then they start kind of like doing the old kind of like, you know, I don't know, gummy worm spine thing again, but crazy. And then, yeah, on the other end of things, you got people like, the Florida Senate basically passing this anti-riot bill. It's just basically setting the gun. Oh, yeah, we're just basically going to allow people to run their cars through protests if they're blocking the street. Yeah, there we go. That's fine. And Ron DeSantis expect to sign that bill. Right. It's also kind of putting a new crime on the a new crime called mob intimidation. Right. And that's defined as three or more people acting with common intent, forcing or threatening to force another person from taking a viewpoint against their will. right? So it's basically all like, we can use this whenever we want, right? So, I mean, and like a 6-month mandatory sentence for battery on a police officer during a riot. And do you know how many people kind of that's the initial charge that they get if they've been arrested in the midst of, you know, police violence? That's a charge against that. And how many of that gets dropped? Well, here they're saying, no, you know, if you get that, well, mandatory police trial. And you can't even post bail until after your first court appearance. When is that first court appearance? We'll see. I mean, this is crazy. So I wanted to highlight that too as well. See, this just happened on the other side of things, right? So, you know, on the one hand, we got to keep pressure on the Democrats. The other hand, you've got the kind of like the strong march of fascism through voter intimidation, through, you know, these kind of laws, which again are not new, right? But they're reasserting this stuff. And it's pretty crazy. I don't know, man. So one, I just really want to make a mention of that stuff about the biodiversity stuff, about, you know, the fact we only have 3% of the world's land remains ecologically intact, just because, just want to remind us, ting, ting, right? We've got to do work there. But I'm curious really to kind of close out this segment to kind of get your take on what happened with Amazon, right? We talked about this last week and say, you know, the vote count was just kind of coming in last Friday. It was clear at that point that the election had been lost, but what actually happened and everything else was kind of unclear. So I'm curious kind of like what your take is on what happened though in Bessemer.
I mean, I think like the one, I think that I don't disagree with
Jane McAlevey's
like postmortem.
Yeah.
You know, I think she's a really good organizer and stuff like that. I think where I disagree is with how the left and people like armchairing it, where we're weaponizing that critique and stuff like that. I saw a lot of that, like weaponizing the critique. I mean, I think that from the optics of it, like you had Amazon really fucking up, especially like irreparable damage to their PR brand with like the peeing in bottles story and stuff like that. I mean, you had them bring in outside scabs to inflate their numbers to drive down the vote of the union. I mean, I think this is why we need to have the PRO Act and to reform our labor laws in this country. You know, they got blown out in the election, but like, we have to completely reform our labor election laws in this country. So, you know, like union busting law firms, even right here in Pennsylvania, like what's the one in Philadelphia that's really big? Congresswoman Scanlon's from. There's like a couple of like the law firms. They're like union busting law firms that specialize in that stuff, you know, where they don't get tax breaks, you know, where it should be against the law for them to operate like that. I know Democrats have to make a break with these with these law firms, and we have to make a break with Amazon. You know, like look, Jay Carney is the head PR spokesperson for Amazon, you know, not exactly the best person in the world. We have to have a party that represents the people, that does stuff for labor, and a party that stops allowing hacks from previous administrations to rise through the ranks and work for these like horrible corporations.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, like that's, they have to get shunned from society at this point, in my opinion. Like if you're a Democrat operative and you're going to work for Uber or Amazon, because they're paying you the most money, then you really don't have a say in the future of this party.
I think, you know, I 100% kind of just, I'll kind of co-sign that right across the board. I do think it's worth time for folks to actually, you know, I put this link in the show notes to read Jane McAlevey's piece, because like Sean said, she's just absolutely amazing organizer, and she is like really, you know, she's hard nosed rank and file organization. And what's I think very useful about reading her piece, right, is that it gets into the kind of mechanics of organizing, right? And when you understand kind of what was happening, what some of the things that happened wrong went wrong with that campaign, It changes a little bit about the kind of coverage that you see in a lot of the mainstream media and even the left media, for example, when it wants to look at everything from 20,000 feet, right? And I think that her point is there's a bunch of things that happen on. Like, let's give you kind of a couple examples of what she says in that piece is that, like, they didn't have an accurate list of workers, right? And there was a and Sam Cedar yesterday on the Majority Report had this guy on from Dissent magazine, Rich Yesselson, and he was talking about this too as well. In the time when they kind of were initially beginning to start organizing, like kind of early on, the union, you know, the RWDSU, the Retail Wholesale and Department Store Union, thought there were around kind of 1,500 workers at the beginning, right? Maybe upwards of 2,000, right? But they didn't have kind of fully accurate lists. What happened, and it's unclear at this point how much of this was a direct response to the pandemic and how much of this was a kind of overt strategy on the part of Amazon, right? The number of workers at that plant, right, and it was a relatively new plant, went from, you know, in the neighborhood of a kind of like 1,500 to over 5,800 workers. So most of those workers were brand new, right? Most of those workers were, didn't have kind of like a history in the plant together, even for that matter, right? And the union didn't have an accurate list of what was going on. And, you know, again, I can understand this. This is what Rich Yesselson was talking about. It's like, you know, from an organizer's perspective, an activist perspective, when you're getting that kind of attention to the campaign, then, you know, you think maybe momentum can carry this a little bit. But that was kind of absolutely critical. And then another thing, is this something you actually do learn a lot in organizing, with union organizing, is that they didn't do a very good job in actually the way they had discussions about union dues. One of the hardest things that I learned when I first was doing organizing stuff down in DC, when organizing graduate student teachers and adjunct faculty as part of the union at George Washington University, one of the hardest conversations to kind of get your head around is like having questions about union dues, right? And the first thing that, you know, I think it's almost natural for people to feel is like, you don't want to really have to talk about like what you have to pay. You want to talk about what you get, right? But what you learn pretty quickly is like, no, you have to address that head on, right? So you have to have a kind of an idea about what the percentage will be, right? What that will do and why it's offset and why you pay union dues, right? You have that, like, you're almost like an offense on like the pros of paying, right? It's your, not just a new responsibility. It's like, this is what gives the union power. Our collectivity, right? Not just the thing, but actually helping fund our own work. Was that kind of deal? And what they try to do, look, Alabama's a right to work state. They try to kind of finesse it a little bit by kind of saying, well, you know, your right to work, you don't even have to pay the dues if you don't want to, right? That's basically not a good deal. Because then you're basically, then you have saying, okay, somebody say, okay, yeah, you want a union, that's fine. As long as I don't have to pay, that's fine. So that means you don't have any commitment. You can't tell the commitment. And another thing that they said too as well is they had the focus was on the gates of the plant, right? Organizing outside the gates of Amazon, right? And do that. So basically you're under the watchful eye of Big Brother as you're doing your organizing. And we know that Amazon had done several things already, a whole slew of union busting tactics, including putting a kind of, you know, of getting the post office to put a special drop box kind of at Amazon, right, like where they could watch it for putting your ballots in during the election, right? They changed the stoplight out front, right, the timing on it. So workers didn't have enough time or organizers didn't have very much time to kind of talk with workers. So you already knew that Amazon was monitoring that space. And if you're a new worker at a plant like that, right, you know, that's going to be intimidating. But you know, this all stems from the fact, if you don't have accurate list of your workers, you don't know where they live, you don't know how to get in touch with them, you don't have kind of internal organizers, this can happen. And so, but what her overall point is, like, look, there was a lot of stuff that was go wrong, that the signs were there, but she doesn't kind of walk away from this with kind of throw her hands up and say that one, Amazon organizing is impossible, or two, the union sucked. Neither one. Right. She's saying this is how you learn about the nitty gritty of this. And matter of fact, because of the things that you were mentioning before, the stories that came out about Amazon, right? The for the first time, we actually got to see in on evening news coverage of the conditions of workers at Amazon. This, you know, has aided a bigger organizing strategy. Right. As long as the focus is on not the flash stuff, right? Not the kind of like the headlines in national media, not just that, but the actual concrete organizing on the ground. And I think that other unions who are doing this organizing now should, coming back to this and looking at those lessons, are going to put us in a much better situation going forward. So I definitely think it's worth a read. Jane McAlevey, I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, closest I could kind of come to say, you know, union goddess Jane McAlevey, her work is incredible. I've learned so much personally from her work, and I know that in our own organizing efforts at Kutztown University, when we get ready for our own strike, I mean, we were passing around her books, we were reading her stuff together to talk about how this might kind of apply here, because it's so clear. So, anyways, anything else you kind of wrap up or kind of add into that, Sean?
Nothing too much. I mean, I expect Amazon to get a revote on this, and I hope this spurs a nationwide movement with all the attention that it got. I think that, I hope they get a revote, and I hope like this becomes a nationwide movement, you know, it's not just like a one-off, which has been in the past.
Right. And given the amount of like Amazon's union busting tactics and all the things they did, violations of labor laws and stuff like that, I hope that also brings that to the fore too as well. Right. To kind of put that on the table, especially after the billions and billions of dollars that Amazon earned during the pandemic. Right. It seems like a kind of like just after the pandemic that we all relied upon people in warehouses like this basically to get basic stuff. And now we're just going to throw them to the wolves. I don't think so. All right. We're going to take a quick break after this, everybody. And when we come back, we're going to have some more discussion of what's happening here in Pennsylvania. Whole bunch of fun stuff as usual. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Want to remind you, you can help support this show. You can help support all our podcasts and all the work that we do at Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/RC Press and become a patron today. We'll be right back after this real quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1854. That was the day wealthy populist and labor advocate Jacob Coxey was born. He grew up in Danville, Pennsylvania, and worked as a stationary engineer in an iron mill. Soon he moved to Ohio and opened a sand quarry. He entered politics and initially campaigned as a candidate for the Greenback Party. By the 1890s, he had thrown his lot in with the populists. When the Panic of 1893 hit, workers flooded the industrial Midwest in search of jobs. Cities across the country were overwhelmed with the newly unemployed begging on the streets. Coxey proposed a good works bill which demanded $500 million for federal jobs. He supported paper currency, public works projects, transportation for rural areas, and full employment. He decided to take his proposal directly to Congress by organizing a protest march on behalf of the unemployed. Hundreds joined him on his march from Ohio to Washington, D.C., forming Coxey's army. They set off from Massillon, Ohio on Easter Sunday, 1894, supported by populists and organized labor. Estimates of marchers ranged into the tens of thousands. His army, however, was stopped along the way by court injunctions, preventing them from commandeering trains and seizing railway lines as they traveled. About 500 eventually reached Washington, D.C. As Coxey climbed the steps of the Capitol to demand the good jobs bill, he and his army were met by police forces, which attacked the crowd and beat them back from the Capitol steps. Years later, his campaigning finally paid off, and he was elected mayor of Massillon. In 1944, he was invited back to the Capitol steps to deliver his good jobs bill, which by that time had become official policy.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Altitude Podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney. I'm here once again with Sean Kitchen. I wanted to kind of get back to some of the comments that we had came in. I just missed them before we closed out the first half. This is from Paul. Paul from our YouTube channel. So I feel the Amazon situation shows us that big name endorsements and media coverage is no replacement for rank and file organizing. I, of course, wasn't on the inside, but it was disheartening to see a national attention versus the actual vote. I agree 100%. All the more reason why I think that The work of people like Jane McAlevey, and, you know, again, I'll give a shout out again to the Majority Report yesterday. Great interview. You know, it was called The Bessemer Amazon Union Campaign Autopsy with Rich Yesselson. It was a great discussion about some of that stuff. And so as a way, and I think that is the best antidote to despair in many ways, right? It's looking at some of the particulars and understanding so we can learn going forward. So pretty good cup. So thanks for the comment, Paul. Appreciate it, man. So Sean, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no. My internet's acting up a little bit. I said, I would also recommend, you know, for coverage following people like Kim Kelly on social media or Strikewave, for good labor reporting as well.
Yeah, Kim Kelly's reporting was absolutely phenomenal. Has been absolutely phenomenal, continues to be. I tried to actually get her on the show kind of a while back, but she was, that was when she was going down an assignment for Amazon. She was like, I have absolutely no time. She's a Philly-based reporter too as well. She does absolutely kind of exceptional work. So definitely follow her on Twitter. You work it. All right. So Sean, I see you kind of a little bit acting up. I know that you know, it happens when you start editing your photos all over again, but what's going on here in Pennsylvania?
So right here in Pennsylvania, yesterday was the final hearing. There was 10 hearings on the election integrity, bullshit that was going on to the House Republicans, pretty much code for, Republicans relitigate the 2020 election. Yesterday was like the first time I think all the House Democrats on the committee showed up in person. You know, a lot of them were just phoning it in. A few of them still were, but like most of the committee members showed up as like a show of force. We're going to be writing about, put videos together on this next week, but there's content out there. At the end of the committee hearing, Donna Bullock, who is the House Minority Caucus leading, the leader of the House, the Black Legislative Caucus, I forget, or the Black Caucus in the House, spoke. Margo Davidson spoke, and Malcolm Kenyatta all spoke out against these hearings. You know, Donna Bullock really laid out the history of Black people voting in Pennsylvania and how it was originally allowed and then taken away in the 1820s and reinstated with the 14th and 15th Amendments in the 1870s, 1860s. So she gave really good detailed history. And then Malcolm and Representative Davidson were really unloading on the lies and the people that Seth Grove invited to these final committee meetings. You know, this is pretty much like a dog and pony show that Seth Grove tried to put on. You know, I will say there was a lot of really good content coming out of these committee meetings of people from other states showing how great their voting systems are and how we can expand them. But also that if appears, and it would, what I'm predicting, that was a front for Seth Grove to then go ahead with the other thing, like the Koch brother operatives that came in. Seth is a member of the American Legislative Exchange Council. He sits on their board of directors. You know, he was part of a couple of emails back after the election back in December to really go after election and what they call election integrity in scare quotes, you know, following that. You know, so like the attacks you're seeing on voting rights here in the United States, in Florida, in Texas, in Georgia, and soon to be Pennsylvania are coming from the top down, from the Koch funded institutes, coming from groups like ALEC and stuff like that. And, you know, we're going to be at the forefront of this. You know, we're going to be looking forward to like taking this up over the next few months. This is what we're going to spend 2020 wasting our time on, protecting the right to vote here in Pennsylvania.
Wasting your time. Hardly a waste, I have to say. pretty crazy.
No, it's not a waste of time, but you know, there's more constructive things to be doing in this state, this legislature, besides fighting these stupid fucking bills. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, we could be like, we could be building as opposed to defending.
Yeah. So, but, you know, like that happened. Malcolm gave a really good speech, pretty much like connected the insurrection to Trump's lies and how the Republicans are still using Trump's lies to now attack voting rights right here in Pennsylvania. You know, like there was a speaker here a couple days ago or last week that claimed that Mark Zuckerberg influenced the elections here in Pennsylvania with his Zuckerbucks, because Democratic committees or Democratic counties in the Southeast applied for grants to make access to voting easier in the 2020 election with mail-in ballots and drop boxes and stuff like that, or having like, you know, pop-up locations and being able to pay for this stuff, because money doesn't grow on trees. Yeah, resources doesn't grow on trees. Putting drop boxes together is not cheap. Like, they applied for this money. The county commissioners, the election officials in these counties applied for this money in grants, which they're legally allowed to do, while the Republican-controlled counties and Republican-controlled election offices in these counties decided not to do that. So they're complaining about Democratic counties applying for free money through the grant writing process, while their counties did not do it, and trying to make the argument that that was influencing the election. Like, yeah. And these are Koch brother networks. These are Heritage Foundation groups that came in the final 2 weeks and gave all this stuff. Like, well, and part of the State Policy Network, which is like all the Koch funded groups and their nonprofits.
Well, and it is really remarkable that you have groups like that. They would rather see voters in their own districts, right, in their own areas, disenfranchised from voting, right, for an ideological, like, you know, argument, than they would actually say, okay, hey, we're gonna get some of this money too. We're gonna make it easier for our own constituents to vote. Said, no, we'd rather our constituents not be able to vote, not have access to those things. So we're not gonna apply for those funds, so that down the road when we look at these other folks, then we can go after them when it comes to that. I mean, it's just like, it's astonishing to me sometimes.
Yeah, and like, they're not gonna have, the Wolf has already came out and threatened a veto override, anything that includes a voter ID in it, which is what they want. They want signature matching, which is, like, hey, you sign a ballot, if like my signature on the voter roll, right, my physical signature on the voter roll, every time I go sign the voter roll here in my ward, in my precinct location, is not the same. It was 6 years ago when I fucking registered. Like, my handwriting has changed a lot over that past 6 years. They want to stop people from voting because of that. Like, they want to make sure your ballots don't match because of that. And they want to allow counties, they want to restrict counties from curing those ballots and stuff like that. I mean, they brought someone in who specializes in purging elections, like purging people from the ballot rolls. I think there was a really great exchange yesterday with one of these people. Who the guy went silent, like, can you still hear me?
I loved it.
And Malcolm jumped in and said, unfortunately, the guy just like melted in
he's
his
like,
computer.
Like, was that a comment directed at me? The guy, first of all, after a
15-second pause,
that guy looked like a cave ghoul too, by the way.
His name was Hans von, like, whatever.
I
which
bet
is like
it was.
These, yes. Very white national sounding name.
Oh God. He was like pasty and like looked like, seriously, like he had been out of the sun for a long, long time. You look like like part of him. Well, whatever. I'm not gonna do character assassination when you don't need it.
You sure? Yeah. But I mean, like, this is who, like, this is what, like, they're working on, with their what we're gonna be expecting the next like year or so to be doing. So I mean, they're gonna make this an issue. They're probably gonna make this an issue in the 2022 election. And, you know, like, Democrats, I think, have to like beat back. Or no, not beat back. We go on the offensive. Like, you fuckers cause an insurrection. And just keep reminding voters that. Like, your lies cause an insurrection.
Yep. And you're doubling down on it. And you're going right after. It's going to do it all over again.
Yeah. I mean, when they mention cities like Philadelphia, like, it's code for the black people.
Yeah, totally. Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, but it's amazing, like, how just, like, blatant their racism is, like, with this stuff.
Yep. I mean, it just gets worse. Well, you know, I mean, this is, look, as the Republican Party has become increasingly like a white identity party, right? I mean, there is no other place to go. I mean, you know, there was times when the Republican Party was, you know, weren't as like absolutely overt, right? But as their numbers shrink, right? You know, as their numbers shrink. And then you allow, you know, you basically build these alliances with these, you know, with these right-wing extremists. And then you're looking at who your base is. You're driving away anybody who could potentially be not like, you know, I don't know, moderate. But I mean, that doesn't even mean anything anymore. And they've just been doubling down on white identity stuff. It's all grievance politics. It's kind of white identity. And so what do you do? Of course, so you have no other option but to kind of be more explicit. I mean, we didn't even talk about this. It's like, you know, with Tucker Carlson basically coming out this week and, like, you know,
the replacement
theory, you know, and then having that reverberate.
And Scott Perry taking up.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Or Scott Perry picking up the mantle and that in a committee hearing.
Yeah, like within like it was like the next day, right?
The next morning.
The next morning, right?
Yeah.
Tucker Carlson goes, I mean, this is like, you know, Tucker Carlson is quickly kind of taking place of Rush Limbaugh at this point. But Tucker Carlson comes on with we're going to popularize and we're going to kind of like mainstream kind of white identity, white replacement theory, which is a freaking fascist term, you know, fascist kind of white supremacist notion. And then we're going to put it out there. And then you got people like Scott Perry, right? Pennsylvania's own. Right, going to the floor and basically reiterating every freaking piece of garbage that came out of Tucker Carlson's mouth the night before.
Yeah. Yeah, Tucker Carlson scares me. Like he's the type of fascist that if he runs for office, like, he scares me.
Yeah, I think people should be scared for him, are scared of him. Because it's but you know, again, I think he's doing a calculation right now. Like, if you remember, there was a poll that was taken not too long ago. They looked at kind of front runners. They're just, you know, kind of polling people in the Republican Party about who they'd like to see run or who they thought would be a good front runner. And Tucker Carlson was right up there. He was right up there at some of the pop. So, and you know, if his name is appearing there, you've got some either his people or people around him that are kind of testing some of that stuff. So I think Tucker Carlson is, you know, with the death of Rush Limbaugh now, I think Tucker Carlson's going to try to figure out, like, he's in a process of figuring out where's going to be his power base. Is he going to
run for president or become the next Rush?
Right, exactly. I mean, seriously, I mean, he's going to have, does he want political power with the presidency, or is he going to, you know, spend the next 4 years or so, for maybe even 8 years for that matter, building an empire on the right in terms of right media, and then go for so we'll see. I mean, we'll see. Because in some ways, you can argue that Rush Limbaugh is one of the most significant influences and had the most political power in terms of ideological agenda of anybody on the right, because of that platform. And I know that Tucker Carlson is not dumb enough not to realize that.
Yeah.
But anyways, so good old Scott Perry, kind of taking up the mantle. Well, it's a good thing that at least, you know, you've got some good news, you know, right here in the city of brotherly love, just trying to look and do some good work. You had, you know, kind of the police department kind of down there going on trying to kind of teach kids about gun safety. Right. I mean, that was a good thing. That's a good news story.
Yeah. And then they said they were doing the Eddie Eagle program. They mentioned the Eddie Eagle program. They mentioned what the Eddie Eagle program was.
It was a Boy Scout thing, right? Eddie Eagle. Cause it's Eagle.
Oh, yeah. I know. I think it's Swoop's reactionary uncle from Thanksgiving dinner.
That one. That Eddie.
Yeah. It's pretty much like it's an NRA program. It's a cartoon that's really ineffective and does nothing to teach people about gun safety. Like the results, it's just like a cartoon. It's a PR front by the NRA. Pretty much. And it's ineffective, and pretty much, you know, groups like Ceasefire PA and residents in Philadelphia and politicians and, you know, like, everyone spoke out against it right away, and, you know, it got canned the next day. But one thing it's amazing is how incompetent of a commissioner Atwell has been, and how she's been able to hold her job through all of this. You know, like, there's been clear warning signs about Outlaw going back to her times in Portland and codifying fascists and allowing Proud Boys to roam free and with their rallies and attack counter protesters, and then have her cops attack counter protesters after the Proud Boys do it. Like, it's amazing she's been able to keep her job after the gassing incident. Like, and, you know, like, she literally just gaslighted herself into keeping her position.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And this is like the perfect example of this. I mean, this is low hanging fruit. I mean, in this context, when you just had, like, last night too, we didn't even put this in the hotel. Last night there was just another mass shooting, right? 8 people killed at a FedEx plant, right? I mean, this is just freaking yesterday, right? And you've got, you know, mass shootings 2 weeks before, and then you've got police officers kind of gunning down more black men. Right. I mean, this is the context. You say, hey, you know who'd be good? Especially if the NRA is in the middle of bankruptcy, right? Where they're kind of like, you know, struggling to say, you know, hey, why don't we help them out? by bringing them in and throw them some cash to bring them in. Yeah, that's what we want. Insane. Insane. Well, crazy. But in some actual legitimate good news from Philadelphia, I got to say that Kendra Brooks, man, I just got to constantly be following what Kendra Brooks is doing. I mean, because she is just really tearing it up down there. And this is just a perfect example. And I mentioned this in the intro to the show where she's introduced these two bills that are basically going to make it, assuming they pass, if they pass, they're going to make it kind of impossible for basically landlords to sit there and just go look up eviction records as a way of denying people access to housing. Right. And why does that matter? Well, you think, especially in the pandemic, because people have lost their jobs, they've not been able to pay stuff. And there's been, you know, the only reason people haven't been evicted so far is because of the eviction moratorium. Right. Because of the pandemic, you could see a kind of like a huge impact in Black and brown communities and poor communities in Philadelphia, right, who could lose their housing and then could be effectively blackballed, right, from having housing and being able to rent in the city again. And these bills would actually kind of put an end to that. And it's like the kind of thing that I wanted to put a little bit of a spotlight on today, because this is something that actually, you know, towns and cities across the state should be paying attention to what she's doing there, because it goes right to the heart of the matter about that relationship between renter and landlord, and making sure that you've got kind of the renters are protected. So she's also absolutely 100% correct in kind of making sure that people understand that the people who are disproportionately impacted are kind of low-income Black women, in Philadelphia in particular. This is going to change depending on what area of the country or what area of the state that you're talking about, but really good work on her part. So kudos to Kendra Brooks. I'll just be quick on this one, Sean. Don't worry. I'm going to talk about this. On April 15th was the not only was it tax day, the original tax day. Oh, that's changed now. But it was the day that Chancellor McDreamy from PASHE, Dan Greenstein from PASHE, was set to go to the Board of Governors to basically report back about his redesign plans and the merger plans of the six schools into two. From the state system of higher education. And he came back and I'm not even going to go into how he talked about stuff, because it was astounding what was coming out of this guy's mouth and how glorious he thinks everything's been and how incredibly transparent it's all been. He's heard nothing but great things and hard work from faculty and students with great ideas all behind this process and charging forward. When you talk to actual faculty members and actual students who have been part of this, they tell a very, very different story. We've talked about that on the podcast before. Ideally, not this coming week, but the following week, I'm going to have some folks on to talk specifically about that on Out to Coop Live, but I'll get back to you on that, and I'll give you more information about that as we get closer. But the other piece of this is that Greenstein comes on and kind of gives all this kind of like, you know, flowery rhetoric. He constructs this argument in such a way that is kind of designed to kind of like, you know, feel hopeful. I mean, it is precisely what Anand Giridharadas has talked about in his book, Winners Take All. This is this kind of like, you know, TED Talk rhetoric where everyone's supposed to walk away feeling good. Everything's a win-win situation when really it's the people, kind of people who are working, right? People are doing the labor and people are doing the work. It's all going to be done on their back, right? So as long as you can kind of present the rosy picture for the people in the professional middle class and the billionaires, you're all good, right? That's basically what he did. When he was done with his little initial spiel, he came on, and then Board of Governors chair Cynthia Shapira basically said, wow, that was inspiring, right? And then proceeded to kind of like corral and help corral the Board of Governors, the rest of the Board of Governors, who were also inspired apparently, to basically, you know, acknowledge and get behind what he does and get behind this redesign. So now the question is like, what, you know, what are faculty and students going to do, right? What is going to be the organizing going forward? And I know there's been some tentativeness on the part of, tentativeness is the wrong word. There's some hesitation to push too hard on the part of the union and faculty, unions, I should say, and faculty, and from some students and thing, because you're worried is that, you know, is it going to have a dire consequence if we you know, go against this guy? Well, you've got basically, you're showing that you have no friends anymore, right? Is that if you have a problem with anything that Greenstein is doing, you have no friends anymore. The Board of Governors has said, you're on your own, right? Greenstein has said you're on your own. At the same time, he's going and trying to kind of like nitpick, but cherry pick faculty members to kind of bring aboard to be his kind of like crew that he can say, look, everyone's on board. We have faculty here. We got students here. He's done a very excellent job in creating a PR thing for himself. I mean, luckily we've got some great reporters like Schachner out on the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who's been covering this very closely, like Jan Murphy, who's also been able to there to kind of expose some of this stuff. And you've got Jamie Martin, the president of ABSCUF, who's been increasingly outspoken as over this past year, when it's been clear that Greenstein really doesn't give a crap about what the faculty have to say. So, look more for that ahead. The one good piece of good news on that one, like I mentioned before, is they did decide to freeze tuition for a third year, which is great. The one thing I will give kudos to on Greenstein was basically said, look, what you need to do is fund the state system. But in the absence of that, there's a bunch of other things you could do. At least you kind of did a mention of that, but that was it. There. One thing I did not mention at the top of the show that I do want to mention now, Natalie Santos is a Kutztown University student who is running for Allentown City Council. I know Natalie. She is freaking awesome. She is incredibly smart. She's fierce. She is dedicated. And she is running for Allentown City Council, and she just got the endorsement of Make the Road PA. She is, and she's still a student there, but she is running. She is from Allentown. She just released her video, her launch video. I do want to kind of like, give her an incredible shout out because, it's been impressive. I just also want to kind of, she's running as kind of, her website is based on a team. So she's got, herself and Eric Rodriguez. So if you go to check them out at, let me just give her thing, votesantosrodriguez.com, votesantosrodriguez.com. You can check them out, check out their launch videos and so on. But most of all, I'll say congratulations. It's so great to see students from Kutztown University and, in the region, kind of young folks in general, stepping up and kind of looking to actively get involved for elective offices and making change. So good luck to you, Natalie. That's all I got for Pennsylvania. You got anything else, Sean?
No, that's pretty much it. I think next week we have a couple of interesting rallies coming up, which I'll be covering and looking forward to going to. I think Zach Roberts will be in town.
Zach! He's back from Alaska.
Yeah, he's going to be going. He'll probably be out in Minneapolis next week, depending on like work. So hopefully he's out here in Harrisburg.
For those folks who don't know, Zach Roberts he's an awesome photojournalist. He's a great, check out his work. Go check out Zach Roberts, basically.
Zach Roberts was the person who got the photo of the chot or the teenager getting the shit kicked out of him and pummeled it. The Reunite the Right rally. The young black kid who was getting pummeled with sticks and 2x4s in the parking garage, and it was his photo that went international. Pretty much like every major newspaper in the country, New York Times, Post, put it on their front page, and pretty much like that photo is responsible for bringing the people who did that to justice.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's great, and you can follow him. Check out his stuff you can follow him on Twitter at ZD Roberts. @ZD Roberts. Check out Zach on Twitter. His work is fantastic, and I do hope he's in town. And I hope you guys can get a chance to hang out a little bit.
Hang out on the deck.
Hang out on the deck, right? What a better spot to observe the insanity than the deck. Yep. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I want to remind you once again, if you're watching us on YouTube, make sure you smash that subscribe button, make sure you like this stream, and do your best to kind of share it around. And make sure you hit that little bell at the end so that you know every time that we go live. And of course, I got to put the plug in, right? If you can, you can help support this work by going to patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron for those $5 a month. We'll be back right after this quick, quick break. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press.
For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Back, everybody. It's Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. It's the last call. We talk beer news, we talk space news, whatever else is kind of on our minds. Get into the cultural realm and some stuff. I didn't put this in this week, but I have been watching some really bad TV. So I could tell you a little bit about that too as well. I didn't want to put links into it because I don't want anybody to go check it out if you can. But anyways, some cool things in space news this week. It's been fascinating to kind of see the InSight lander on Mars. It's actually this week, it's some concerning stuff. It's going into emergency hibernation mode because basically there's been dust that's been building up on its solar panels. If you don't know, remember what the InSight lander is, it's basically the one. It's got this little kind of drill in it, right? And it's basically measuring kind of like seismic activity in Mars. And why does that matter? Well, because, you know, one of the things that has been one of the big questions is that what happened kind of to the inside of Mars, right? What happened to like any kind of tectonic, if there ever was one, kind of movement or whatever. And it was thought for a long time that there, you know, that the core is just kind of like whatever, frozen or just kind of solid or is not moving or there's no liquid or anything like this. They didn't know. So they put this on there and it turns out that they've detected more than 500 Mars quakes there. So there's some kind of activity that's going on, whether that's geologic, whether that, you know, that's, you know, kind of plate tectonic stuff, or whether that has to do with, you know, hot material under the surface, whether it has to do with, you know, they could distinguish between, say, asteroid impacts and things like this from there. So that's fascinating. And they've also been able to kind of begin to measure some of Mars's cores, because that's been, you know, one of the big challenges of figuring out, well, what's at the center of Mars? Like, you know, even measuring the Earth's cores is hard enough, right? They've been, because you can't obviously go to the Earth's core to actually check it out and take samples. You have to do it kind of using that thing called science, right? To measure the ways that kind of different waves bounce off the center and how they're bent and all that kind of stuff. And so now they're able to do some similar stuff on Mars, which is pretty fascinating. But anyways, the lander is in a place that's called the Elysium Planitia. I always mess up that word. Elysium Planitia. It's been there since 2018. And it's a bit of a crater, right? And so the crater walls block off some of the winds. And so now there's not these big strong wind gusts, which means that the dust that has been settling onto the solar panels is not getting blown off on a regular basis like it does for some of the other rovers. So now they're trying to figure out a solution for that. NASA scientists say that don't worry about it. This is going to be fine there. Another rover news, robotics of the red planet. You've got our little helicopter, Ingenuity. Was supposed to take its flight last Sunday, or actually early last Sunday. We would have found out about it early Monday morning. But it came up, there was a software glitch. There was a problem that with its flight control. So they basically had to figure out what it was. They have a fix. They had to send it out there. Now they got to run through another battery of tests to see if it's good to go. They're saying that we might actually have a flight as early as this week. I was really hoping to be able to come on today and talk about that first flight, but there. I should also mention that SpaceX is now going to go forward with their SN-15 Starship thing to see if they could blow up another rocket. So that'll happen.
I'm sorry. I'm trying not to yawn, but I'm like having a yawning spell right now.
I understand. So
it's not you.
No, it is. It is. It is
it's me. Not you. No, it's please. Just like
it is me. Believe me. I know. I know. I'm not a fool.
It's subconsciously. It's like it's.
It's like, but you know, someday you watch. Someday you're gonna find yourself. You're gonna be having a conversation with somebody, and then you're gonna be able to bring up these freaking stupid ass space facts that you think are stupid ass space facts.
At least you.
And then it's
gonna
lead to something wonderful.
I don't know. I mean, I was hanging out with my neighbor the other day, but we can talk about that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, okay, about that. Other cool NASA news is that acting administrator Steve Jurczyk, I hope I got his name right, he announced that, you know, not only, I mean, this has been known for a while for the Artemis mission, that's the mission to the moon, that it will include the first woman on the moon, right? That they're already made that commitment. Now they're saying we're also going to send the first person of color to the moon. So that's pretty huge. And they've said that it's actually what I found fascinating about this is that, you know, here you've got this, you know, this part of the Biden administration that's been very, very conscious about this stuff. And apparently that's actually built into some of the funding formulas from the Biden administration to be making sure that we're having, you know, all these like administrations or all these agencies basically reflective of the American population. So this is really kind of cool news to hear that's actually, you know, it's not just some random thing that happened, but it's actually been part of initiative. And I do have to say too, Jim Bridenstine, who was the former, right? He was Trump's appointee to NASA. I'll be willing to give him a little bit of credit on this score because he was also, you know, one that was instrumental in kind of the renaming of NASA's headquarters. Was the one that kind of like really championed and kind of bringing kind of more people of color, women into the Artemis pool. So, you know, that's been going on there. And NASA has had, you know, a mixed history, but of late, like since the 1970s, 1980s, and stuff like that, has been a kind of real strong initiative and push for kind of representative, you know, being representative of its workforce. So this is really cool. Two things I do want to kind of give a shout out to. So now, if anybody out there knows anything about this, please let me know. I came across in my kind of endless pursuit of just kind of like, you know, new beer news, whatever it might be. There is a brewery down in Pennsylvania. I'm sorry, down in Philadelphia. It's called Human Robot, right? And I came across them kind of a few weeks back. Right. And I said, oh, yeah, man, we should just try that out. But they didn't ship. Right. So and I'm not going to go down to Philadelphia right now to go up and just to kind of pick up beer. I just cannot even justify that and like in my brain. But shipping it to me, it's a different score. And I will be 100% honest. I am sold on Human Robot Brewery because of their name and their artwork. Okay. I have no idea what their beer is like. I'm going to try it. Right.
Totally acceptable reasons to get it.
I'm telling you, I will be on this podcast with a Human Robot hat in no time and with their Galactic Secret t-shirt in no time. Right. Because it's I'm like, whatever. I'm just loving this. I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that their beer is good, too. That's all I'm going to do. But they have some they have some interesting stuff here. Like just to give you a couple examples of what I'm looking at. They've got this one. It's called the Twilight Campfire. Oops. Let me just pull it up. See if I can. Why was this not allowing me to do this? Here we go. Nope, it's just giving me the logo. It's not allowing me to read the whole thing. But it's an Imperial Stout that comes in at about 9%. They've got another one, which I'm very interested in this one. It's called the four-pack of Bergenstrasse, right? And that is a Franconian-style Zwickel beer. And I have to be honest, I have no idea what that even is. Do you have any idea what a Zwickel beer is?
No, I haven't. I do not.
No idea. Obviously a German beer. My guess is that...
you think?
Yeah, given the fact that it's inspired by coal-fired kettles, my guess maybe it's like a Rauch beer or something like this. I don't know. I'm fascinated by that one. And the other one that – let me see if I can find this one. Cielo. Oh, I put this one right up top. Oh, there's a couple of them here. They also have a Blueberry Mango Splash, right, which seems to be very similar to the Free Will's Mashes. And they also have this one here that I want to try out. It's the Hallertau Pils. That's a German-style Pilsner, and it's their house Pilsner. I've been really liking Pilsners of late, which I'm it's kind of going back to kind of like, I don't know, it's like a throwback to another time when I was really, really loving some Pilsners. after I had spent like a summer in Germany or something like this. And it was just like, oh, this is really good stuff. But their gear is just totally freaking cool. It's like kind of like spacey, retro-y, all sorts of fun stuff. So if anybody out there knows anything about Human Robot Beer, if you've been there, you've tried their beer, things like that, I'd love to hear it. You can kind of email me at ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your takes on it. Pretty soon we're going to have an option that for kind of leaving messages to us and things like this. That's coming for the summer. Probably won't get that for at least a month, but I got some cool things kind of in the works that I'd love to hear your take on stuff. So anybody knows anything about Human Robot, please let me know. But I would be remiss if I didn't give you this week's releases from Free Will Brewing right here in Perksey, PA. They've got three really good looking ones. The first one is a prickly pear margarita mash. That's a sour ale with prickly pear, key lime, orange agave, and milk sugar. It's like this beautiful, beautiful kind of like raspberry-ish color. It's gorgeous looking. Can't wait to see what that is. It's another one of their mashes. You know I'm a fan of their mashes. It comes in at 7.5 ABV. You've got a return of Garcia's Forest. This is another great beer. This is an IPA that's brewed with flaked oats and wheat. It's hopped both in the kettle and during the fermentation with Citra, Mosaic, and Chinook. It's really a delicious beer. And they say it has kind of like a grapefruity character with notes of Tangelo, white peach, and honeydew. I think that's pretty on the mark. Does have a little dank to it, which I happen to like it a bit too as well. Comes in at 7.1 ABV. And last but not least, for the highlights for this week, we've got one called Dissolution, and that is a DDH IPA that is brewed with a base of flaked oats and wheat, hopped in the kettle with Galaxy, and then dry hopped with Citra and BRU1. It says it's tropical fruit salad in a glass. Each sip is like a blindfolded spoonful and sometimes heavier on the pineapple, sometimes mango, even with a touch of coconut, perhaps. We'll leave it to you to interpret, but we think it's quite a nice balance of the whole. This is from their direct read, obviously. And this is, once again, 7.7 ABV. Comes in on. And I will give a shout out to as well. They've been relying, they brought a new artist on board, right? This guy, Kolahari, and he's been doing some of the can labels designs, which have been absolutely cool. This is another, it's like a dual skeleton label by Kolahari, which is really, really awesome. I've been checking out his work on Instagram and things like this. Is just great stuff. So check it out. So that's what I got. What's going on with you, Sean?
Nothing too much. Not a whole lot. Just enjoying the layabout life here in Harrisburg.
I heard you worked hard this week. I mean, you were up early one day, for example, doing your laundry. I mean, that's like, it's got to be exhausting.
Yeah, I mean, get my laundry done before 10 o'clock. Is a feat unto itself.
Well, you got to make time for the deck. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I do have a couple phone calls during the week that I have to get. That I have to do. Not a whole lot going on. Finally met up with my neighbor who she's been traveling around the country. We had a really great conversation about her travels. She converted a van into like her mobile home and just like hit up all the national parks. So we kind of, she's interested in the work I do. So I was filling her in on how crazy it's been in Harrisburg. While she was away for those like few months and like the shit that was going on and stuff like that. So it was a fun conversation. It is definitely like therapeutic to be able to talk to people about how fucking insane this past year was, at least getting it off my chest.
Yeah.
So we had a really great conversation about everything, stuff that's been going on. Hopefully we get back together, go out for a couple more drinks. So looking forward to that. Not else a whole lot else going on. I hurt my foot running this week. So I've kind of been sidelined and just like rolling it out with like a rolling pin and like doing like stretches and stuff like that. So, but I'm down 10 pounds over the past month, cut back on the beer and the whiskey and that shit.
Oh man. I mean, your lifestyle channel has been kind of like popping this week too.
I got some great photos of, Malcolm Kenyatta in yesterday's committee hearing.
Yeah, you did.
I love one of the things I love about Malcolm is that he actually engages with people on his social media. I'm not going to say like unlike Fetterman, but like,
but you just did.
I mean, like, unlike most other politicians, he is super active, super responsive on his Instagram and Twitter accounts. It's pretty cool. had an absolute blast watching his fucking video yesterday. And he's like, yeah, it was me. What are you gonna do? I said it. What are you gonna do about it? I said what I said. Like,
well, that's what I like about it, because there was someone that immediately, like, you could see that someone was gonna try to get him, right? They're like, oh, who was it? We're trying to identify his voice, and he comes out on Twitter, is like, yeah, it was me. I said what I said, because it was freaking unfortunate. This nonsense, you know, one owned it 100%. It's like, you think I'm gonna run away from that? Are you crazy?
So, you know, weather's starting to get a little bit nicer. The trees are blooming. I made a really nice good pasta dish yesterday.
I saw.
Try not to pick on it throughout the morning and night at this point.
Well, and I'm really glad that you
spelled it correctly.
Yeah, I know. I never knew. I mean, I never knew. Here I was always, you know, whatever.
Misspelling chicken Florentine.
Yeah.
So that's why Twitter needs an edit button. You know, I'm still waiting for my computer to get here. Hopefully it comes next week. It's still in South Korea right now, so we'll see. But you know, hopefully the gears of capitalism are working and it shows up on my front door this weekend or yeah, by Monday. So, you know,
you're gonna have the deliver with the white gloves kind of coming in.
Yes. And have them open it up and take it out of the box for me and tell them set it up. But no, I ended up getting some more accessories for it this week. A wireless mouse, wireless keyboard, I am going to be buying a monitor for it. So I'm looking forward to that, like having like an actual monitor set up. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be a nice, like, you know, I'm redoing my, my office area, and I'll be writing it off on taxes, you know, exploit those tax laws. So, you know, use them to the fullest.
There you go.
As I told my neighbor, I said, more money, more problems.
Oh my god.
she started laughing. Yeah, we had a fun time, so
that's good. I mean, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, so not a whole lot going on this weekend. Waiting for get my next shot on the 26th. So
you get your next what, your shot? Oh yeah, that was my other big news. I got my number two this week.
Oh, did you see the tweet? This guy was delivering hoagies to a vaccination site, and they tipped him with a vaccine with his first shot.
Like, no, really?
Yeah, like this Jimmy John's driver, like someone like delivering food on the bike. He put up on Twitter, is like, "Hey, I was delivering a bunch of hoagies to this vaccination site, and they asked me if I wanted to get vaccinated. I said, "Yeah," and they vaccinated on the spot.
That's awesome.
So. And like people were like responding to it, like, oh, this is the most Philly thing ever. Of course, like some of the people from like outside the country were kind of pissed. Like, here I am sitting in Ontario waiting for the over 50 crowd to get vaccinated, and this is happening in the United States. Which is kind of like, I mean, you think about it, it's kind of remarkable how fast we are vaccinating the population here in Pennsylvania and throughout the country.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. When you hoard all the vaccine, you're preventing other people from having it. Yeah, it's like, it's remarkable.
Hey, the winner goes to spoils.
Jesus Christ.
And then also, I mean, like, the one of the things I can't, like, you have the vaccination that's like spiking through the roof, but also you have a fourth wave of a pandemic happening at the same time.
Well, yeah, exactly. We even talk about that. I mean, even in Pennsylvania, those numbers are going up. Which is
I guess we're just waiting to like vaccinate our way through it in a couple weeks.
Well, I think that's what they're trying to do. That's what they're trying to do. And I don't know. Like, I mean, the more spread, the more chance of variants. There's been a few cases, and again, I don't want to go crazy, but there are a few cases of second infections, for example. And
I mean, the breakthrough cases are happening, but like they're happening, right, at extremely small rates.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think that, you know, of course, Johnson & Johnson got paused this week, which we didn't even talk about that. And, you know, again, I think even people that are concerned that, you know, the pausing is kind of giving aid to the right. I really don't think so. I think that, like, we could debate whether or not there should have been pause or that kind of stuff and things like this, but, you know, I understand it's a incredibly low rate of You know, there's six, right? They identified six women who got blood clots because of this. So you're talking about like literally ones in millions at this point. However, right, if they're unclear about what the cause and how it happened and things like this, it could point to potential other, you know, other things. So that's what they're doing. You know, whether or not that's the best thing, I don't know. But I don't think that is going to like fundamentally alter the trajectory of this stuff. Yes, it will give like short talking points to some right-wing folks for a bit, but, you know, I have been, I don't know if you had this experience too as well, but when I got my first and my second vaccine, being in a room with a whole bunch of happy people was pretty awesome.
I was not. So I went through the drive-thru. Mm-hmm. I was able to get a ride from one of my neighbors who, he hit me up this morning. He's like, hey, when you get your second shot, let me know when you get a ride. So UPMC has a mass vaccination site set up at Hack here out in Harrisburg. And I think they're up to like 2,000 or 3,000 people a day at this point, like going through, which is just like phenomenal. Yeah, but like my parents get vaccinated. My mom gets her second shot next week, which is looking forward to that. You know, I was concerned about getting sick after fucking Easter, like being at a fucking steakhouse. Like,
I was concerned for you, but I was just not going to say anything, you know?
I'm sitting there like, man, I'm rolling the dice, peer pressure, you know, my parent. I will admit, like, no, I mean, like, I took it seriously, like, this pandemic pretty seriously mm-hmm. throughout the past year. But I will admit, I mean, like, we did not put our lives on pause, like a complete pause like others did. And I just don't think, like, you know, it's my family. Like, you know, like my mom was like, you're coming in for Christmas, right? I mean, I didn't go home for Thanksgiving because of, you know, going to those rallies after the election. And I didn't want to be sick and spread it to other people
right.
who were there. You know, I pretty much stayed in for the whole entire month after Thanksgiving. You know, I went home for Easter. I'm looking forward to getting my second shot done. So now I can actually like take the train into Philadelphia when I need to and stuff like that. Like, you know, like we still got together for the holidays and stuff like that. And, you know, shit's not stopping my mom from doing anything at this point.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so.
There you have it, man. There you have it. That's good. I'm just, you know, my mom is, you know, dying to see me and the kids and everything like this. And, was hoping to kind of maybe come down for Mother's Day or something like this. It's also my anniversary that weekend. So it's, 15 years, man, 15 years.
Oh, it's my mom's parents' 40th anniversary that weekend.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. So we surprised my mom with a really nice, Mother's Day gift. We're going to get her a Le Creuset. She's been dying about this for the past like few months now.
She doesn't listen to the podcast. So you're going to totally freaking.
No, she does not listen to the podcast.
Like, you're basically spilling the beans here, man.
we got her a 6.5-quart wide round Le Creuset Dutch oven, French oven. Something she's been talking about for the past several months. You know, it's not a high walled Dutch oven, but it's really good for like braising and making like pot roasts and stuff like that. So I can't wait to like see her reaction when she gets it, when she feels how heavy the box is, because like it's going to be really like a surprise for her. Like, you know, she's been talking about it for the past several months. It was on sale. Williams-Sonoma had it for like $250. So me and my sister split it down the middle. And we're gonna give it to her for her a nice 40th anniversary and nice Mother's Day gift. My dad, on the other hand, they're low maintenance. He doesn't expect anything.
So what, you gave like a chocolate bar? Right. It's like oh man.
But so
hey, you doing anything for the weekend?
Yeah.
You
know. Not really. I'll probably go out, take some walks, get some photos, usual, you know.
I'm going to dig, man.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to dig. I'm going to do some kind of more garden work and stuff. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we don't drop below freezing and frost. I you know, we totally rolled the dice and did a bunch of planting, my wife and I, last, like this past week. And know that, like, I mean, it's, you know, we're like 3 weeks ahead of like last frost average date and things like this. But we're like, we just don't want some freaking things on the ground. I need to be outside. So if I have to cover everything up and stuff, I'll have to do it. But
it's like snowing in Boston right now.
I know. That's why I'm like, I'm a little nervous. Crazy. All right, man. Well, hey, have yourself a good weekend and, you know, enjoy it, soak it up, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right, man. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank you. Don't forget, if you haven't done already, head on over to our YouTube page. Make sure you subscribe there. We cracked the 100 subscriber level, and now we kind of like I'm kind of a little gearing up for 200 now. So keep it in. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast. Get on over to iTunes. Make sure you leave us a review. Give us that 5-star review. It helps kind of like, you know, get the podcast out. It helps other people find our show. Same goes for YouTube too as well. Leave us comments and make sure you like the stream. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. And the last thing for the day, if you could head on and you can help us out by becoming a patron by going over to patreon.com/rcpress. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month. That would be freaking awesome. But for now, I wish you all a fantastic weekend. You know, summer's coming, but we've just got lots of fight ahead of us. We want to be here for you and hope you can be here for us. Talk to you soon.
See ya!